Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome to Curaleaf, a medical marijuana dispensary. Whether you're a longtime patient or you're just getting acquainted with this incredible plant, Curaleaf of Pennsylvania is honored to guide you along your medical marijuana journey.
This is the Blue White Breakdown, the premier podcast for all things Penn State football.
Talk about culture. It's something that should show up in every aspect of your program.
It's the Blue White Breakdown, brought to you by Penn Live.
Here are your hosts, Daniel Gallen and Dustin Hawkinsmith.
Welcome in. It's the Blue White Breakdown, brought to you by Penn State Health. Dustin Hawkinsmith here with Daniel Gallen for the first time in a couple weeks, you and me, Daniel. So let me just get the happy holidays and happy new year out to you. You were with Bob Flowners and you were down in Tampa for bowl week. Obviously, you guys put out a bunch of good podcasts last week, but you and I will get us caught up on the latest in Penn State football, which some of the bombshell stuff has subsided and we've got some more ordinary news to cover. But we will look back at the Outback Bowl a tiny bit and a new commitment that came in just prior to the Outback Bowl. So we'll touch on that in a moment. And by the way, some of the news from earlier in the week, PJ Mustipher coming back. That you guys covered that on the Blue White Breakdown, you and Bob did earlier this week. But look at Aeneas Hawkins. He decided to give up football. He graduates. He moves on. One kid that I had some expectations and hopes for him when he was coming out of high school didn't really come together for him at Penn State. Only played in two games with a developmental squad guy, but still noteworthy nonetheless as you're taking a look at this defensive tackle picture for next year.
Yeah, definitely. In his statement, he mentioned the fact that he dealt with a lot of injuries during his time at Penn State, which is always kind of the sad undertones when you see someone announce that they're giving up the game and moving on. But yeah, I mean, I think when you look at that defensive tackle picture, this year probably would have been a great time for him for a defensive tackle further down on the depth chart to make a move up with PJ Mustipher's injury. And the fact that Penn State had to go into the transfer portal to get Derek Tangelo there. So we're through kind of the bigger announcements. Jordan Stout is going to the draft. Like you said, PJ Mustipher coming back. I think there's still a couple other dominoes in terms of guys who have extra eligibility who could come back. I think the big one that's still out there is Mike Miranda. He's a fifth-year guy, so he could come back for that sixth year. Whether or not that happens, we don't know yet, but I think that's kind of the big one that's left for a starter. And so then after that, I think the announcements come more of people like those guys that are in Aeneas Hawkins' situation, who are further down in the depth chart. They have their degrees or are about to get their degrees, and then it becomes more of a personal choice than a football choice. We saw Winston Eubanks medically retire a couple weeks ago. And I think that is just kind of the non, I guess, bombshell roster churn, just kind of the normal or just the lower level churn. I mean, transfer portal will probably be picking up at some point. And it's just that time of the year. But I think Aeneas Hawkins, I've never met him, never been around him because of when I came onto the beat. But by all accounts, someone with a big personality, getting that broadcast journalism degree, and seems like someone who's going to be able to use it.
It does seem like he's got, and I think Penn State's got a few of these guys. You've seen them on podcasts and things like that. Nick Dawkins on a podcast. It won't be long before he overtakes, you and I for sure.
In terms of
podcast power rankings, he's going to be above us in no time. What do you think about this defensive tackle picture as it sits right now? So PJ Mustipher, let's just assume full health. Keziah Izzard got a chance to play more higher leverage snaps than he probably would have otherwise because of Mustipher getting hurt and Derek Tangelo opting out of the bowl game. Devon Ellis, Amin Vanover, Hakeem Beamon, who his situation was almost, it feels like about 10 years ago that we were talking about him not being available this season. Fatoma Mulba, Jordan Vandenberg, who I think had five tackles in the Outback Bowl, another beneficiary of those snaps. Cole Brevard, you get, you know, Caleb Artis is coming in, and the kid from Florida, Durant, is coming in. Do they need anything else, in your opinion? I mean, is this mix good enough?
I think that it's something where I wouldn't be surprised if they looked for someone like a Derek Angelo, basically, you know, a veteran that can come in and play right away to slot into that spot next to Mustafa. I mean, it's not really a commentary on Izzard or Ellie's in terms of where they are, but I think that when you bring PJ Mustafa back off this injury, he's not going to be necessarily, I mean, who knows what his human body is capable of. I mean, you've seen the way that he can move at 326 pounds. So nothing would surprise me, but given the timing of his injury and when the season starts, you know, I think that you would want to have another experienced body in there to help kind of manage his reps, not just early in the season, I think throughout the whole season as he kind of gets ready for the NFL. But I think that it wouldn't be a surprise if you add another veteran body in there. And then if Izzard, Ellie's, or even Vandenberg, I think, is going to enter next year as kind of a real under the radar player to watch, just given how he looked in the bowl game and some of the things that his teammates are saying about him. They're very complimentary. I think that that's someone that you're really going to want to watch. Amin Vanover, I think, made a couple plays in the bowl game. All those guys did. I mean, the Arkansas offense gave them chances to, and they were able to here and there. Obviously the overall end product left a lot to be desired, but when you're down seven or eight starters, I mean, it's a tough situation for all involved, but I think it's a really intriguing group. Devon Ellis, I think he came on really strong at the beginning of last year as kind of that number three defensive tackle. And I did think it was interesting that after PJ Mustafa got hurt, they moved Izzard into the starting lineup and they kept Ellis as that number three in the rotation. But obviously defensive tackle is one of those positions where it just takes a lot of development just because of physically what you have to do and what your body has to be like. And it's a much easier position to play at 21 than it is at 18. And so you look at kind of these redshirt freshmen, redshirt sophomores, next year is when that you're going to want to see kind of the full blossoming, I guess, of Izzard and Ellie's and Vanover and just kind of these guys in their development. But Team Beeman is the wild card. We'll see it when we see it.
You know, these are interesting names. They're interesting players, but you know, anytime you go into an off season without what I would call a proven space clogger, outside of PJ Mustafa, a proven guy who can occupy blockers, you know, you think about what Arkansas was doing to them and the task ahead of this group of defensive tackles. They just didn't have much of a chance with the way that they were built. Without Mustafa and Tangelo, this group wasn't built to slow down a 240-pound quarterback behind, you know, a pretty big SEC offensive line. But, you know, there were some silver linings along the way and the reps that some of these players got to take. But I do agree that, you know, anytime you can add a senior defensive lineman of any kind who is capable of contributing, you have to explore that. But where they're at with this position group, even if at the very least, you know, you're not bringing in a star, you're bringing in somebody who's going to force Keziah Izzard, Devon Ellis, and those guys to elevate their game, even if that's the only thing they do, it's probably worthwhile. So I would be surprised if they don't add another veteran there. Speaking of veteran linemen in the transfer portal, Penn State in the top five for Cornell All-Ivy League offensive lineman. Hunter Norzad, he's 6'4", 298 pounds. As I mentioned, All-Ivy League guy. They were out in 2020. They did not play, but he came back in 2021. Had a nice year. And could this be another link in the chain, another addition to the Ivy League, to Penn State offensive lineman pipeline?
Yeah, I think that Hunter Norzad is a really interesting player there, especially when you look at Penn State brought in Eric Wilson this year. They had another Harvard tackle, Spencer Rowland or Rolland, committed for a while before he decommitted at the end of November. When you try to forecast what this line might look like next year, especially after Rasheed Walker's announcement and with Wilson being out of eligibility, I think that it gets interesting. And it is also interesting that Norzad appears to be exclusively a right tackle. That's where he's played at Cornell. I don't necessarily know that in bringing someone like him in and making that leap in competition, I don't necessarily know that you would flip him around to the left side. So when you look at what Penn State is bringing back next year, I mean, depending on what Miranda does, I think that if you're operating under the assumption that Miranda doesn't come back, then that leaves just Juice Scruggs and Caden Wallace as the two guys left on the line. Scruggs looks like he'll play center. And then Wallace, Mike Yurcich was asked if he'd thought about moving him in the guard, which a lot of people kind of see him as his long-term fit. You know, Yurcich said, oh, we haven't thought about that at all. We're focused on right now. But if you move Wallace inside the guard, then suddenly you have that right tackle spot open. You saw good things from Olu Fashanu at left tackle in the bowl game. Salim Wormley is coming back. And then you have Bryce Effner also coming back, Landon Tangwall in the mix. It's a really interesting group of linemen. I don't know if interesting is necessarily a good thing, just because it's going to be very unproven. But at the same time, you came into 2021 with a relatively proven group, and you saw what the results were.
There is a possibility here for a little addition by subtraction. And it's not a knock on any of these individual players, but something was amiss. And I think, you know, a lot of Penn State fans feel like something's been amiss on that offensive line for a while. So interesting, unproven, new faces, new approach, a transfer or two. I mean, I think a lot of fans out there would welcome, you know, any combination of those things, including the arrival of Hunter Norzad. If you are able to get a capable right tackle, whether that's Landon Tangwall or Bryce Effner, or, you know, if Olu Fashanu is on the left side, whatever. If you have a capable option and you can move Caden Wallace inside, there could be some benefits to that. You know, I think he's been cross-trained, as most of these guys have, to have a little bit of a footing at the guard position. And I think just the way that he's built, you know, his future looks to be at the guard position, and whether his future begins in 2022 or not, well, I guess we'll have to see. But I think the best version of this offensive line probably has Caden Wallace at guard, because I think he could be a mauler there and be a better player there than he was at tackle.
Yeah, definitely. I think that this offseason, you really have to look at everything, whether or not it means you Scruggs a center or guard, you know, anything along those lines. I think that given how this offensive line played, and given kind of the options that you have and the versatility that those options give you with someone like Tangwall, who has played both inside and out, Effner, I think over the course of the year played every position except for center on the offensive line. And so I think that that's a valuable piece that should be coming back next year. So I think that everything's on the table when you look at kind of fitting this puzzle together. And that's kind of where it'll be interesting this spring to kind of see how Penn State plays around with it, how Phil Troutwine mixes and matches and kind of gets to what you want. And I think that you really have to watch kind of those, what we talked about kind of in terms of the interior defensive linemen and the developmental curve and how long it kind of takes to develop and get to that point. If you're not just one of these just naturally blessed guys that comes in so mature, I think that you look at these redshirt freshmen, redshirt sophomores, and true freshmen going into their second, third, fourth years in the program. That's where you're going to see someone like Fashanu have the chance to make a big jump. Tang will have a big jump. You have to look at that on the developmental curve. I know that around signing day, there were a lot of questions like, oh, did we fix the offensive line? Did we fix the offensive line? It's like, well, there's probably only a handful of guys that can come in and contribute day one as freshmen on the offensive line. And you're not going to sign all of them. And if you're Penn State, it's hard to sign those guys when you're looking at the other types of schools that are recruiting them.
This is the Blue White Breakdown.
Welcome to Curaleaf, a medical marijuana dispensary. Whether you're a longtime patient or you're just getting acquainted with this incredible plant, Curaleaf of Pennsylvania is honored to guide you along your medical marijuana journey. Have questions? Visit us at Curaleaf.com or stop in to see us at any of our 12 locations. Let's talk medical marijuana and let our confidence become yours.
We'll circle back around to 2022 and look ahead on this Penn State roster. I did want to touch on Neo Avery, who is the four-star from Maryland who committed in the 2023 class on Friday night before the Outback Bowl, New Year's Eve, late in the evening. Just another sign, I think, that recruiting never really sleeps, and thus neither does Daniel Gallen. So he was commitment number 6 in Penn State's class. Pretty good looking edge defender, and I think he plays tight end as well. Listed at 6'5", 230 pounds, number 208 player in the country in the 24/7 composite. And his addition has Penn State still locked in at that number three spot in the national ranking. So again, you know, 2022, that class was pretty exceptional, and it looks like they're able to kind of keep building in 23.
Yeah, Avery is an interesting prospect. I mean, you look at the various recruiting services to see what he's listed at. You know, you've got edge rusher, you got athlete, you got tight end. On ESPN, he's still listed as a pocket passer quarterback, which I think he did early in his high school career at Good Counsel. Plays in the WCAC, same high school that produced Stephon Diggs and a bunch of other really talented players. So you know that he's someone who could come in. You know, he's been playing against the DeMathas, the Gonzagas, the St. Johns's of high school football for his whole career. So he's forged in that kind of competition, which I think is something that you really like to see with the adjustment. But the measurable standouts, you 6'5", 230, that's the type of size you want out there on the edge. And I think that it's kind of striking when you look at the number. I think he's the sixth commit in the class, and all these guys are big. Tight ends are big. The offensive linemen are big. Even the cornerback, Lamont Payne, I think is listed at over 6 feet. So it's really interesting to kind of see, you know, how this is kind of taking shape. Last year, it seemed like speed. You got Omari Evans. You got Caden Saunders. You got Tyler Johnson. Those kind of more big play, faster guys. And now you look at the class of 2023, and Penn State seems to have its sights set on some of these bigger guys. Which is pretty interesting to see. So I think Avery is a good pickup. Georgia was in the mix. In his announcement, he did a little bait and switch, put on the Georgia hat, throw the Georgia hat, unzip the jacket, Penn State t-shirt. Well played. So, I mean, anytime that someone is publicly saying they're going with you over a school like Georgia, I think that's a big deal, and that's something that you can use, you know, no matter how close it actually is and all those other things that go into recruiting. But I think this is a good pickup. Obviously, the timing, New Year's Eve, I was trying to wind down for the night ahead of a big Outback Bowl day, but I had to stay glued to the computer a little bit longer into the night than I wanted to for Avery's decision.
Thanks a lot, Neo Avery. Costing Daniel recreation time now, but that's the way these things, you know, recruiting. There's always something you haven't seen before, and not saying his announcement wasn't out of the ordinary, but you know, we're not in their shoes. But sometimes I can't really understand why it's a 7 o'clock New Year's Eve announcement instead of, you know, something else. But you know, good for him, makes his college commitment. I do think Penn State fans want to see, you know, Penn State beating out Georgia for more recruits and not so much your Purdue's and Indiana's, and no disrespect to those guys, but where Penn State envisions itself wanting to go, you should be competing with Georgia for prospects. Mm-hmm. And Neo Avery is a good one with a lot of room to build on his athleticism and frame. And 6'5", 230 is exciting because, you know, number one, he's got another, you know, year of high school football left and some time to build that frame up the right way when he does get to Penn State.
I'll take the New Year's Eve commitment over the Joey Porter Jr. Christmas morning announcement that he's coming back for another year in my convenience power rankings.
I would love to see a personal recruiting convenience power rankings assembled by you. The best and worst timed recruiting announcements just from your own selfish interests.
It's a long off season, but I will say that I'm pretty sure I was on PTO for basically all of July last year. So and that was not the most convenient run right there.
Well, we'll put PTO in air quotes because of that. The busiest month in the history of Penn State recruiting. Happy holiday month. I did mention we'll get back around to 2022. We would be remiss, and I want to just kind of get your take on this because, I mean, to me, coming out of the Outback Bowl, You know, you couldn't control the opt-outs on defense. You couldn't really control the fact that Penn State's defense, they were young and they were outmatched by an Arkansas offense that had a good idea of what it wanted to do. And in the final 30 minutes of that game, flipped the switch and they did what they wanted to do. You can't really blame them for that. Interim coordinator, where I think people were really trying to hang their hat, was looking at this Penn State offense and just one more shot to put this thing back together. There were good vibes early in the season. There were some exciting things going on. Sean Clifford looked really good until he left that Iowa game. So you're just looking for one more chance to prove that what's coming back in 2022 in terms of your coordinator, your plan, your quarterback has the makings of being a Big Ten title contending offense. And I think that those expectations were not met in the Outback Bowl. So what's your take on that performance by Sean Clifford in particular? He was 14 out of 32 for a 195, a touchdown, two interceptions, some pretty bad throws along the way. And what that means for whether that's a quarterback competition, the quarterback depth chart, or the odds of success for this offense, how does this performance factor into all that in your mind?
Yeah, it was kind of – I don't necessarily want to say it was a shocking performance. I think that kind of oversells it a little bit, but I think the fact that it was a little bit more of the same is a little bit more alarming. You know, Penn State had more than a month to get ready for this game. Clifford said during the week that he felt good, that he was healthy, that the time off was really good for him. And then he came out and looked like the quarterback that we saw at times on the stretch in the second half of the year. So I think that this offseason, you know, you can point to the offensive line specifically as something that really needs to get fixed. But I think overall, there needs to be a sort of a philosophical alignment in terms of the Penn State offense. In this game, Evon Lee was running the ball well. We saw some flashes from Noah Cain that we hadn't really seen during the season. And so you see that. But I think they only combined for 11 carries. Meanwhile, Sean Clifford has thrown the ball 32 times. The game didn't really get away from Penn State until late. Obviously, it was still 17-10 into the second half, and you could have still run the ball. I think that in the press box, a couple of us came up with this thought separately, that it was almost the inverse of the Michigan State game, where in the Michigan State game, you're throwing the ball around despite the snow. That Michigan State secondary is awful. Jahan Dotson probably could have reset his own receiving yards record in that game. But then in the second half, Penn State tried to really, I guess, control the game. They tried to run the ball. They tried to really force it down Michigan State's throats. And that kind of manifested in the short yardage plays at the end of the game, where they just could not gain those 2, 1, 2, 3 yards where the passing game was working. Then you have this game where the passing game is just not really working. Parker Washington kind of bails out Sean Clifford with that amazing catch. Still not exactly sure how Keandre Lambert-Smith got that wide open for that long touchdown. But other than that, nothing was really going on. But then you get some juice from Noah Cain, you get some juice from Keevon Lee, and then there's just no kind of consistency there. So James Franklin, Mike Yurcich, Phil Troutwine, Taylor Stubblefield, Jaylon Sider, all the offensive coaches, I think they need to kind of figure out what the approach is going to be, what the identity is going to be. And I think you have to build around that. And then that's even before you get to the Sean Clifford conversation.
Yeah, there's a lot of conversations that have to unfold here at all those position groups, at all those levels. I think in this game, personally, the fact that they connected on a big play and they were close to another one, it almost kind of changed the coach's outlook some. It's like they were big play hunting a little bit. And this game, as you mentioned, was an attainable deficit for almost the whole way through, where if you didn't have to lose patience, but I really felt like they got a little bit intoxicated by the pursuit of the big play, and they abandoned the running game was this game, where those guys both showed a little bit of juice and could have done some more damage, I think, but didn't really get that chance. But you know, Penn State has been looking for some kind of identity for a while. And you know, it's gone through a couple of every coordinator since Joe Moorhead. It's gone through that and haven't really been able to put their finger on, okay, what do we want to do? What do we want to be? And there's been no more glaring instance of that than when you have short yardage situations. If you don't know who you are as an offense, that's your test of whoever you are as an offense, that's your approach to try to get two or three tough yards. And Penn State just still doesn't have a clue, and they don't have a clue how they're getting short yardage. Hence, a Jordan Stout fake punt again. You know? and when they went back-to-back on that one drive against Michigan, that was Franklin's explanation. It's like, well, we haven't gotten short yardage any other way.
Yeah, I think yesterday on the podcast with Bob, I mean, when you zoom out and I was talking about, you really zoom out and you think about that sequence at the end of the half in the Arkansas game, just kind of bizarre. The fact that part of the idea of the play was for the ball to get intercepted to swing field position. And then the Arkansas player ends up dropping it. Arkansas follows up, they're moving the ball, and they follow it up with a trick play that Jair Brown gets the interception. It was just I think everyone needed to go into halftime and kind of calm down after that one. But yeah, I mean, I think that you kind of see those issues, kind of the spider web that goes out from it, where, okay, you can't gain just 2 or 3 yards on the ground on the running game. Then suddenly that's affecting special teams. And then suddenly that's putting your defense in bad spots. Suddenly that's letting the opposing team make these kind of momentum changing plays. I think that the ripple effect there pretty goes out pretty far, what we saw in 2021.
Everybody just needed to go into half, chill out, eat a blooming onion, get yourself under control, and come out in the second half. Well, one last item before we wrap here. I mentioned, you know, think about 2022. Stacy Collins hired this week as special teams coach, also coaching, and he's done this before, coaching edge defenders, nickels, outside linebackers. That hire came pretty quick after Joe Lorig was officially announced at Oregon. So it would seem that the pursuit of Stacy Collins or the pursuit of a special teams coach had been pretty far along by the time any official announcement had been made with Joe Lorig.
Yeah, and on top of that, you kind of look at the Stacy Collins, Joe Lorig connection. They played at Western Oregon at the same time. They coached at Western Oregon at the same time. They coached at Idaho State at the same time. And then they had 10 years at Utah State that went back to back. I thought that the Stacy Collins hire was interesting when you look at his resume. Nothing east of the Mississippi, just out west, save for a stint as a defensive coordinator in the Austrian Football League. In Vienna, which I would be interested in hearing more about. But I think that that's kind of interesting. I mean, obviously, you want to expand your geographic footprint. You want to bring in guys that know different areas of the country and that can have different kinds of input and do some different things. But I thought it was an interesting hire. Obviously, special teams is one of those things that it's very nuanced and it's very kind of hard to see, I guess, the development there, or it's difficult to see the identity sometimes of that group, but that's someone with extensive experience. And I am interested to see kind of the outside linebackers and the nickels development. You know, as outside linebackers coach, Stacy Collins will be working closely with Manny Diaz. And then you look at the quote unquote nickels coach. I mean, Daquan Hardy was fun to watch last year. He made some really good plays. He was not afraid to mix it up on the blitz in run support. He was working at some safety in the lead up to the bowl game. And I think that he said that he'll be playing there more next season, which will be something to watch this offseason. But it'll be interesting to see kind of as you turn over that defense and there's going to be a little bit of a different defensive identity, how kind of those outside linebackers, how those nickels and everything like that change. And that's going to be Stacy Collins's job.
A lot of pieces to come together there on defense, especially coming out of that Outback Bowl where you saw, you know, the linebacker situation. You know, we started to get some more breadcrumbs there, but we'll see as things go forward. We've got a lot to pay attention to as we move into full-on off-season mode. Next National Signing Day is coming up in February. The transfer portal is always a threat to run hot one way or the other. I think there's still some decisions to be made from current Penn State players. We might see those over the next few weeks or so. Penn State could go out and reach out and get somebody else out of the portal. So we'll be monitoring that on PennLive.com, also on the Blue White Breakdown. For minute-to-minute stuff, you can follow Daniel on Twitter, at DanielJTGallen. You can also find our written and video work on PennLive.com/PennStateFootball. And we'll stick with you all through the offseason here on the Blue White Breakdown, which you can find on Alexa, Apple, Google, Spotify, Stitcher, and YouTube. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next time on the Blue White Breakdown.
This is the Blue White Breakdown.